Welcome one, welcome all. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 174 is coming at you right now. Howdy, everybody. Portal Game Podcast is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, and it is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can go to www.theportalct.com. You can find us on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. That's where you will find me, your host for this episode, The Brant. Also, you can check out our somewhat brand new, although now a year old, and I should stop saying brand new, YouTube channel, Step Into The Portal, where you will see live plays of games, reviews, unboxings, and more from our store and from my lovely attic here in Connecticut. Howdy, everybody. This is episode 174 of the podcast. This one's entitled Fly Casual. And it is not just me. I am joined by the wonderful Paula Deming from the West Coast. How are you, Paula?
Hello, hello. I am 3 hours earlier than you, so I'm doing pretty good. I will say, I feel like I should have been asked to be on episode 175. That feels like a momentous number. As opposed to like 174, which just feels like, it's just one that just happens.
Maybe I'll skip 175 in your honor.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, you would do that for me. Thank you so much.
By the way, the $1.74 is in the mail for you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, that's also, you pay your guest by the episode number.
Correct.
I could have really used the one extra cent, but it's fine. I'll let it slide.
Well, you have one thing going on us on the West Coast right now. You have light.
We do, for a little bit longer.
It's always a funny thing.
With the time change that just happened, obviously the sun is setting much earlier, and I feel like the sun sets a lot earlier on the West Coast than I remember it setting on the East Coast where I grew up. And I feel like it's like 4:45 here in the winter and it's dark and I hate it. I hate it. It gets dark way too early.
I think, you don't have to say where you grew up, but I think you must have been on the eastern edge of your time zone. That is probably why. And now you are further back in your time zone. So it probably makes sense. Like, I know when we go to Gen Con in Indianapolis, the sun sets much, much later than it did.
I hadn't thought about it like that.
It does in Connecticut, because it's the same time zone in Indiana as Connecticut, but I'm 12 hours east.
Yes, because you're
12 hours west.
Interesting, yeah. I hadn't thought about it like that, but that makes sense. I grew up in North Carolina, kind of in like the middle-ish of the state, but that's, that's a lot more east than Los Angeles. So
yeah, and that's a funny part too, that North Carolina is actually west of Connecticut. Like, you think of the coast as straight, but it's not at all.
But it's not, because it like curves, it does that.
And then Connecticut's like actually the part, like if you're driving Route 95 in Connecticut is west to east. It's not north to south. Because Connecticut turns it all sideways.
I'm actually going to be in Connecticut right before PAX.
What?
Yeah. My sister just moved there because my brother-in-law is in the Navy, and so they've been restationed up there. And so I'm going to go see them for a few days before I go down to Philadelphia for PAX.
Oh, my gosh. If you have any time, let me know. And I think if he's in the Navy, I think I know where he would be. So I am 45 minutes from there.
Ooh.
So maybe we can catch up. Or if you have a little time, you can pop by our store, too.
That would be fun. Yes.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Definitely.
I'm flying into like Rhode Island though. It's a whole, no one cares. This is about board games and people don't need to hear me like, I'm flying into some airport called TF Green.
That is it. That's the Providence Airport.
There was not a good flight into that airport from LAX.
Yeah, no, it's tricky because you got New York and Boston, but you've got Hartford and Providence, which are kind of the secondary. So you're closer to things, but usually the price jumps up a little bit. So, that is super exciting.
Yeah,
but like you said, we have a podcast going on, so we'll talk about that. But I'm excited you are coming to Connecticut. That's amazing.
Yeah.
We have so many board gamers in Connecticut. We have content creators. We've got game designers. Like, it is a bustling hubbub of board games. So
place.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I don't know why. I mean, there's a decent number of people in Connecticut for being so small, but there's that. So people may not know who Paula Deming is. So
that's
can
true.
You enlighten us as to a small portion of the variety of things that you do for board game content?
Yeah, so my name is Paula, and I make the board game sketch comedy series called Things Get Dicey. If you just type that into YouTube, it should pop up, and they're just short, comedic, I hope, videos about what it's like to be a board gamer, basically. I also am a cast member of the podcast This Game Is Broken, and I contribute videos to Watch It Played. And I stream board games on Twitch, on my own channel, twitch.tv/PaulaDeming, but also for Gen Con, twitch.tv/GenConTV. And also now I manage the Twitch channel for Watch It Played, twitch.tv/WatchItPlayed. So yeah, playing board games live on the internet like three times a week now. It's kind of
Nice.
crazy. Yeah.
I love playing games live. I did not know
It's
that was a thing
fun.
that I would love doing. I am a physical board gamer. I've got pieces in front of me,
Yeah.
and then I've got the overhead camera, and that's that, because I don't know that I play board games to get away from screens, but I'm definitely happy to not be in front of a screen. But I don't like playing by myself because I'm an extremely extroverted social person. And so I like to be live. So at least if I'm playing a game by myself, I'm interacting with an audience
Yeah.
rather
Yeah,
than
you
doing
really
it on
are
a
like you're
screen.
solo, but you're talking to everyone. I've actually just recently gotten into solo gaming,
Oh, okay.
partially because of, I know this isn't on our, we have a loose syllabus
Agenda.
itinerary of what we're going to talk about. And this is not really agenda, that's the word I was looking for. I was like, syllabus is not the right word. I only am thinking that because I know you're a teacher. But I've been playing board games on stream, but a lot of times what I do for that is I'll play the digital version. Either like a Tabletopia or tabletop simulator with someone, say, like Matthew Jude, or by myself with a Steam app, but then you're playing against like an AI. It doesn't feel like a solo game. But I have started doing this solo series for Watch It Played called Table for One, where I do pre-recorded and edited playthroughs of the solo versions of games that Rodney has taught on his channel. And I found that it has come much more naturally to me to make those videos because of my experience with streaming and talking to. I was like, well, I'm already used to kind of playing a game by myself and talking out loud while I'm doing it to the audience. So when I make my Table for One videos, I just kind of pretend like I'm talking to my Twitch chat, even though they aren't talking back to me like they would during a live stream. It's been interesting, and I've actually started really getting into solo games and be like, I just want to like play this puzzle just by myself. Which is
Right.
funny because I didn't used to think that would be a thing that I would be drawn to.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, and I totally get solo gaming. I don't know. The window open and closes for me sometimes. Like, oh, right now I'm enjoying this. So I'm not able to review it yet because I promised people that I would play all of Descent, the new Descent.
Ooh,
But I
yeah.
think I'm really close. I think I'm like three missions away from beating it. So I have been playing that, like, I'll play two solo and then my wife will play one with me. And then I'll
Oh,
play one
cool.
solo and then she'll play one with me. 'Cause she's not quite on the pace of like, let's play, 16 of these. But she's like, I could play one of these a week or one every other week. And then I play the ones in between. And I just am thoroughly enjoying that game. It got so much negative feedback from the app and from the cost. But so I've been enjoying that one solo. But it's
Nice.
just like a certain type of game that works
Yeah.
for me. I almost like things that are more like, beat this game, then beat your score. Even though I like
Yes.
math and puzzles, I'm just like, well, I want to beat my score, but I really want to beat your score.
Yeah, the game kind of becomes your other opponent at the table as opposed to you being your opponent
Yeah,
at the
so
table. Yeah.
cool.
Ooh.
Well, people want to hear about games, Paula.
Yeah.
Games, games, games. So tell us what you've been playing.
Yeah, well, speaking of playing games solo, actually, this is a good segue because one of the games I recently played was Chronicles of Crime 2400. And I played it solo. It was actually coincidentally for a Table for One episode recently, which might be one reason why it's on my brain. But I think something that we were talking about just now about the solo game experience that has almost like a narrative built into it, like you're trying to beat the game. Well, a game like Chronicles of Crime, which is published by Lucky Duck Games, is like it's kind of you against the game because you're either playing it solo or you're playing it cooperatively with just kind of whoever else is with you. and you're trying to solve a crime of some sort. And it's an app-driven game, so you have cards that you set out. It's so easy to play. Like, you don't even need to read a rule book, really, because you just like scan the first card with the app on your phone, and then it literally like tells you what to do. And you know, the person you're talking to like gives you all their dialogue information. You can occasionally choose how you respond. You might scan a location. So you might go to a crime scene and you scan the barcode on your location card, and then it presents for you a like a VR room experience. You can hold your phone up and then like look around your room and see the crime scene. And then based on what you spot in the crime scene, you go into a little like evidence deck and pull out all the cards that you think match something you saw in the crime scene. And then you scan those and the app tells you whether or not they're actually important. And you're basically going through and trying to gather the information you can within a specific time frame to solve the crime at the end. And then you like fill out a little questionnaire and you get points, obviously, for correct answers, but also the amount of time it took you to solve the case, and sometimes little bonus points for like side things that you happen to discover along the way. So there's a bunch of different versions of Chronicles of Crime. There's regular Chronicles of Crime, which happens in like modern day London. And then they've been putting out this, I think they call it their Millennium series, which happens in different time periods. So there's one that's like Chronicles of Crime 1400, Chronicles of Crime 1900, and Chronicles of Crime 2400. And I've played all of them except 1400. And I think I've decided Chronicles of Crime 2400 is my favorite. It's got
Ooh.
this like Blade Runner almost type aesthetic to
Nice.
it, where it's got this like future dystopian technology. Like the detective you're playing in 2400 is one who, like, you have like you used to work for the force, and then you realize that they were kind of corrupt, and so you quit. But they had given you all these like cybernetic implants to help you be a detective, and they
Okay.
like took them all out of you when you quit the force. So you're scrounging around occasionally trying to find new ones to like, you know, implant in yourself, and then you can like scan crime scenes for different kinds of information. Or it's just like, I think it's a really interesting the way this particular setting is using technology. The puzzles you need to solve in the game are really interesting, and the style of crime I found interesting because it wasn't just, I mean, there was like, here was a murder and you kind of have to solve it, but it was also like, you have to prove what caused this murder to keep these corrupt people in charge from blaming the wrong person, to protect this area of, because you're trying to like fight for justice for this downtrodden area of society. And it was just so cool to like, at one point, I was like, well, I can't get this person to talk to me. How do I get them to talk to me? Oh, wait, I have this cybernetic implant that would allow me to like give them a jolt, and then that might. And so I like just like scanned the implant card, and then I scanned the thing, and then like the app's like, you fire a shot at them, and then they talk. You know, I felt like I was making choices that was actually interacting with what the game had given me, and then affected the narrative in a way that I think is just so cool. I just had a blast with it. So that's what I yeah, and I've enjoyed the other Chronicles of Crime, but there was something about this one that I was like, I really liked this particular story. Just into that, I guess, like cyberpunk Blade Runner type aesthetic, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a
Yeah, I feel like I remember the original Chronicles of Crime had like labs you could send stuff to, and either you got some information back or maybe you got it back like later. I can't remember what they
Yeah.
did. But there's been some of these recent ones. Like I know there was kind of like a mafia theme one a little ways back where it's more like you have actions you can do in the moment.
Yeah.
And that does seem to be the ones that people are preferring. I haven't played as many of them going forward. But it sounds like that is just kind of an interesting piece of like, ooh, I could make the decision now and see if it changes how the person reacts to me.
Yes, it's
Kind of like
neat.
the Van Ryder detective game had a lot of that,
Yeah,
right? So you
the
can kind of
Detective
like
City
make your
Vengeance.
choices how you're going to interact, which I guess is kind of even like how video games do that these days.
Yeah, it's almost like a hybrid video game board game
For sure.
situation. I also think that Chronicles of Crime 2400, from what I've seen, has the best like diversity in its characters
Ah, nice.
compared to all the other games. There is a
Sure.
lot more diversity in terms of ethnicity and gender, and also because of the like cyberpunk thing. They were all really interesting. Like some of them were robots, and some of them have like crazy tattoos, and some of them had, you know, it's like it had a mohawk, and there's just really interesting art style in it.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we did a, was it last weekend? Yes. Last weekend, we did a 24-hour event at our store, and we
Oh my
raised money
goodness.
for Connecticut Children's Medical Center, obviously through Extra Life, which is the main one
Nice.
there. So we were open all 24 hours. I streamed the first 10 from the store,
Wow.
and then I was interacting. I was playing games with kids. I was playing a designer brought a game that they're like almost done with. So we were playing the prototype. So I
Oh,
didn't keep
cool.
streaming all that stuff because it just didn't make sense to do all that. But during that and the overnight hours, because we went midnight to midnight, we played a game called Master Word. Now, this is a game from all the way back in 2020. And I don't have the game, and I'm trying to remember the publisher. I know it's that Canadian company. They have a French Scorpion
Is it
Mask.
Scorpion Mask?
Yeah, that's the one. And Yellow, I think, publishes it in
Oh,
America.
yeah. That, yeah.
So Masterword is kind of like Mastermind. I don't know if you ever played that game.
I
Kind of more of a
haven't.
where you're trying to guess like colors at people in front of you. So this one is one person is the clue giver, I guess, for a lack of a better term. They basically get a code word. So the code word might be chimpanzee. And then it'll give the other players a clue, like animal. Basically, it gives them a category. And then they're going to, as a team, write down kind of guesses. And it's almost like 20 questions. So you don't really have to open with like, is it a person, is it places, or a thing, because they kind of give you that category to lead in, right? You know it's an animal. And so you're writing things down and you're trying to figure out like, is it four-legged? Is it a mammal? Is it what, you know, whatever. You're breaking down those categories. So each person who's playing, other than the code giver, makes a guess as to what they think it is. And then the clue giver tells them how many of those words are correct, like the right category.
Interesting.
So if they said mammal and they said, I don't know, whatever, if they said mammals, lizards, and you know, four-legged, you'd only have one. I'm gonna go with chimpanzees or not, chimpanzees. Chimpanzees
Chimpanzees that
are getting a little southern accent off of you there. I'm gonna go with them being two-legged. Well, semantics will follow. But so then they would tell
that I
you,
agree with that.
there you go. So they'll tell you that you've got one correct. At that point. And so now they don't tell you which one of the three is correct. So now you make another series of guesses and they'll tell you how many of those are correct. And at some point during the game, the clue giver is allowed to one time, there's these little Mickey Mouse looking thumbs up. They can take one of those thumbs up from any previous spot and place it on one of the cards. So they can really narrow down like what you're talking about. I'm trying not to use the words because they actually come out in order. So if I use the clues that we had, I will give people. But let's say it was something like Mount Rushmore. And so people were guessing, you know, whatever, and they were like, and they, you know, they were guessing like it is it a building, like it's a famous place or something. You might do landmark if somebody guesses that. And now they know, oh, it's not a building, it's not a bridge, like it's a place, it's a landmark. And that would help to kind of narrow things down. So you
Narrow
could do that
down.
one time. Really, what the game is it's a lot of arguing semantics, and that normally would sound horrible. Like, count me out, right? If that's what people are going to be doing. But it doesn't work like that. Because you're working at a team, you're almost like arguing the semantics to make sure that you really clarify what you're trying to do. Because the way it works is if you actually guess what it is, you lose. You have three
Really?
cards. Yeah, you have three cards that are like red bordered, and you have to write your official guesses on one of those cards. So you only get three guesses as a team once you think you've narrowed it down. If you guess it earlier, so even though I might think it's chimpanzee, I'm going to want to put something adjacent to chimpanzee to make sure that I'm right. Because once I make that guess, if I guess, and I'm sorry, once I put that down, if I it wasn't one of my guesses, then the team loses. So you have to kind of like
Interesting. If that's one of
work
the
your way
things you've
around it.
written down to like narrow down your clues, but that was the actual word. You're like, sorry, you guessed it too, or that's the actual word. And
Yeah,
oh,
so
that's an interesting kind of like twist.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. Like you start just getting into all sorts of categories and people are thinking one way and you start going in a different direction and somebody pulls you back. And the fact that you can write whatever you want on those cards actually really is exciting. Because if you think of something like Code Names or Just One, where you can only write one word, it's trying to limit it so that you can't clarify. But this is the exact opposite. So you're writing things like two-legged animals specifically that they would be in a sitting position, right? Like, and you can put a whole like phrase of what you're talking about.
That's so funny.
We were doing like we had had like domesticated animals, but we wanted to clarify like pets, but we didn't know how close that was. So we were thinking about like animals that live in the house, but then somebody's like, well, a mouse could live in your house, but it's not a pet. So then I had to clarify like, well, animals that people want living in
Yeah,
their
desire to be
house.
lived in your.
So it just really just, I mean, you're just trying to, there's, I think there's a score system and who cares, right? It's one of those games. But this was one of the streams, the third Extra Life stream we did. I don't know how well it comes across. I was kind of like, you know, jerry-rigging a stream to be up at the store temporarily. And it was that whole, I don't know, what did we play at? Maybe 4:30 in the morning till about 7 in the morning. So you can imagine how
Seems
that
like
went
very
over.
loopy.
We were very loopy. So I don't know if people went back and watched the streams, it'd be funny, but I had to actually walk away. I was crying so hard at one point. So it's a great game, and we came back to it twice more during that
Wow.
24-hour session.
It
So
sounds really fun.
it's a great game, and I was thinking like, oh, should I talk about it? Like, not because it's from last year. Obviously, we all know that's just kind of silly. But yeah, no, I really actually want to make sure I talk about games from last year because we all kind of know last year was a blip, right? We got to go back and play those games, right?
There's
I
a
think
lot of
of.
stuff I think that came out in 2020 that got kind of missed over because, especially a party game like this.
Sure.
We weren't able to get together in parties. How did it get played? It
Yeah.
probably didn't.
Yeah, so that one, that was really good. That is a master word. Definitely check it out. It may or may not work. If the semantics drive you nuts, it just may not be your thing. But if you're into word games, time's up, all that kind of stuff, I think this is going to be your kind of game.
Fun. That sounds really fun. So my next one I want to talk about is Unfathomable.
Ah.
So this is basically a Cthulhu reskin of Battlestar Galactica. So instead of being on a spaceship, you are on a ocean ship, and instead of having Cylons coming after you, you've got, the great old ones, you've got the deep ones, and then they're little like minions that come out. But a lot of the game basically, if you know how to play Battlestar Galactica, you'll pretty much know how to play Unfathomable. I played it a couple of weeks ago. A friend of mine, I'm lucky because a friend of mine had it because they needed to learn it for a how to play video they were making for it. So they're like, come over. My friend Shay Parker was like, come over and play this with me so I can help learn it. And Battlestar Galactica for me is a fine game. I played it probably too early in my foray into the hobby. I never really watched the TV show, so I have no nostalgia or care for the theme at all. And it's kind of a heavy game for someone who hasn't played a lot of games. And it's got that like traitor thing, and you're just like losing the whole game. Like it's just constantly. I remember playing it and being like, I would like the Cylons to just defeat us now. I'm ready to lose this game so it can be over. And I've played it again since and enjoyed myself. And had a particularly fun playthrough of it with Crystal Dax at one point, which was super fun. But I thought, I like the like Cthulhu theme, that like horror monster theme better than I like this sci-fi thing. So let's try Unfathomable. I liked it a lot, and I think I would absolutely choose it. And now a lot of people will have to choose Unfathomable over Battlestar Galactica because BSG isn't in print anymore. So you. A lot of people who might want to play it won't be able to get their hands on it, but if I had to choose, I would absolutely choose Unfathomable. I thought they made tweaks to the game, mostly to help account for the re-theme and just to make it kind of fit a little better. Again, I think the character representation, especially for a Cthulhu game, which I find often the character representation in those games is a bit stereotypical for my taste. It's really great. There's a lot of variety in the kinds of characters you can pick to play. And I mean, of course, it comes with a ton of minis, which and they're awesome. And man, I just had such a good time playing it. And the hidden traitor mechanism worked really well because it's one of those games where you can start out the first half of the game, everyone can be just a normal human and we're all working together. And then the second half of the game, in the original in Battlestar Galactica, you can find out that you were like a Cylon and you didn't know you were, because I guess that's the thing in the show. And with Unfathomable, it's still kind of like you were a sleeper agent. Like you, something happened and you were influenced by Cthulhu and you kind of like turn and become like a cultist, as opposed to there are some people who are hybrids in the game. So those are the ones who like look like humans, but they're actually like deep sea creatures the whole time. But halfway through the game, you might become a cultist and convert and try to win. So, like, at first, we were like, I don't think we have any traitors in our game. I think we're all working together really, really well. And then, like, halfway through that turn happened, and I was like, I think we do have. I knew I wasn't a traitor. And one of our traitors revealed themselves. And then I was like, I think one of you is a traitor. I know one of you is a traitor, but which one? I don't know. And it's fun because everyone has a different way of winning. Even if you have two traitors, if one is a hybrid, they're trying to like sink the ship at any time in the game. If they sink the ship, they win. If you're a cultist, you want to wait to sink the ship until the very last turn of the game, basically, because you're still a human. And the idea is if you sink the
Oh,
ship
right.
and you're a cultist, you can't swim to shore. You die. If you're a hybrid, you're like part sea creature. So you can swim and it doesn't matter. But a cultist needs this ship to sink while they're close enough to shore to be able to like survive it. So it's interesting that even the two traitors are working together, but sort of not. And the art on the game board is just beautiful. And I had a really good time of it. I think it is a really wonderful re-implementation of that system and that Battlestar Galactica game. And I would say if that you are interested in that hidden traitor kind of game and you like that Cthulhu type theme, check this out. And if you it really enjoyed Battlestar Galactica and also happen to be a fan of a Cthulhu theme, or you're at least not actively turned off by it, I think you'll really like this game. I think it really honors the original while for me slightly smoothing it out a little. Yeah, I had a great time with it.
Nice. Yeah,
Yeah.
I definitely want to check it out. It was in our store in cases.
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty
It's
big box,
big, yeah.
tall. And so I think there was like four to a case, and we had like four cases of it. So I was like, wow, we got like we either had 12 or 16 copies. So definitely expecting it to, sell, and people have been talking about it. So it's certainly something I want to sit down and play. I would actually say for me that Battlestar Galactica is way more interesting of a theme
Yeah.
than Cthulhu. I don't know why. Cthulhu's just never been an interesting theme to me, and I notice it every year, especially during October. I love Halloween, but just all like horror and monster, it's just not my, I'm kind of like horrified to me is really a neat theme and stuff like that. Maybe I'm a little more like classic in my approach to that stuff, but I have nothing against it. I don't look at
Sure.
it and go, oh,
Well,
I
different
don't
tastes for
want to play
different
that.
people.
So
Yeah.
I'm excited, yeah, to try that. And I think I've got a good number of games of Battlestar Galactica. I'm gonna guess somewhere between 10 and 12 games that I had played, because that was when we played a lot. And even though it was longer in Hidden Traitor, it always felt fun. Even when sometimes it was just fun to just reveal yourself
Yeah, it
as a
is. It can
Cylon
be
and just
really fun just
go,
to be like, you
right?
know
And get
what?
all these
Especially because then
powers.
you're like, I get to get this power and now we're gonna have a super crisis and blah, you know, like all that.
Yeah.
Like,
And it
yeah,
does
it can
speed
be
the
fun.
game up. Once you reveal, so there can be that element. So was it still the same time frame? Because it sounded like it was going to be shorter, but it sounds like it still pushes about 3 hours.
I'm trying to remember now. I would say it's definitely a 2 or maybe 3 hour game,
Okay.
depending. Although, you know, it was also a learning game for us,
Sure.
because we were like remembering the rules and learning the nuances of the new this the, it's not major changes, but some small changes. So as it being our first game, it probably took a little longer than it would
Sure.
have otherwise. But yeah, it's still, I would say, probably a good 2.5 hour game, I
I
think.
always wonder
I
with
mean,
bigger games like that, though, even though it is a learning game, it's like you're probably not then turning around to play it the next weekend. So you're
so
probably looking at
every game's
6 months. So every
kind
game's a learning game. So like I think there's some merit to when a game gets up to 3 hours and has a lot of fiddly rules that like that probably is the time frame because
That's
unless you have
probably how
somebody
long it's
that's
going to take every time.
playing every month, you're not really sh and what's the odds you're going to play with that same group? I mean, how often do you play a
Right.
game where everyone has played the game before? Right? There's
Well,
always a
that's
team.
why I can't keep a Dungeons and Dragons group going consistently. You get
Yeah.
like 2 or 3 sessions in, and then everyone's like, I'm busy. It's hard to get together again.
Nice. All right, next up for me is the Deadlies. And this is a game that was nowhere near my radar. But for the event, Kurt Covert came over, and Kurt Covert is the owner of Smirk and Dagger Games, and he is from Connecticut. Smirk and Dagger Games is in Connecticut as well. So he came over and set up a bunch of his games. He had a prototype of an abstract game, and he had some other games set up, and he had suggested that we play this game, The Deadlies. Now, I will play any game, as I've said, but Take That games tend to be tougher for me to play. I'm probably most classically known as like your Euro strategist. You know, I'm a math teacher, so like let me break down all the square roots and pis and all that kind of stuff, right? But I honestly, sometimes it's like, no, I don't want to do that. Like, I want to do the opposite of that. So when you get to Take That game and you can put it into a package that's, say, 30 minutes or less, or even better, 20 minutes or less, I forget how enjoyable those games are because there is no love lost if I lose a game that takes 20 minutes and is all Take That. So the Deadlies is that. It's basically based on the seven deadly sins.
Oh, cool.
And so it is like Uno. It's a, I guess it's a hand-shedding game is what we tend to call those now. But it's got a couple clever things. So first off, you start with six cards in your hand and you have a little token in front of you. When you get rid of all six cards, you turn your token to the four and now you draw four cards and you have to get rid of all those. Flip your token to two, and when you get rid of your two cards, now you win the game. So it's almost like playing Hands of Uno all in one game. So yes, you have an advantage if you've gone out, but you're not out yet. And then each of the cards you can play. So on your turn, you just pick a card from your hand. Each one represents one of the seven deadly sins. And then they have all these Take That powers. So, like Wrath is the really fun one where you play Wrath and you make a player draw two cards. And then if they have Wrath in their hand, they can play it back on you. And then if you have Wrath, you can play it back on them and back and forth just drawing cards. And I think maybe it's Pride. You can play a Pride card. And then you can pick a player, you draw two cards, and if you have no pride cards in, you can switch hands with them. And I forgot, it's a little different from that. You can play any number of cards as long as they're all the same suit or all numbers in a row. You have numbers 1 through 7. So if you get all the numbers in a row, you can play those. And then the card that you put on top, so like the highest number, would be the one you trigger. So there are ways to play a bunch of cards on your turn. And that's it. You just go around triggering all those abilities, but they're just really fun. Like they make people laugh. Oh, you got to say lust. So lust is I play a lust card and I pick a player and I say, "Do you want to, do you want to join me?" And then they say yes or no, and then either they can choose to do nothing or choose that both player will discard a card, but if one player discards a lust card, the other player has to draw three cards. So it's just got that like mind game. It's right. It's like the opposite of love, right? It's
Like
a mind game
bluffing,
instead of,
yeah.
yeah. So I just thought that was a clever way of them doing that. So again, a game that I just don't know that I would have gone out of my way, but with Kurt there, and it was just really fun. Like I'm gonna pick up a copy of this and play it. And the artwork isn't too like Pride is a lion,
Oh,
Gluttony is
cool,
just like
yeah.
a person shoveling down food. It's not super gruesome. Even the lust is just like a cat with a heart coming out of it. Like they know what they're doing, right? It's almost family friendly. Your mileage may vary depending on people. But that was the Deadly. So really another fun game. By that one I was totally awake. So that had nothing to do with being tired or anything like that. But I really
I
enjoyed
knew
that. And so I,
exactly what I was thinking and feeling.
yeah, and I forget how enjoyable Take That games are in a small package. They
Yeah,
really are a
especially
lot
when
of
they
fun.
don't
They get you
last too
laughing.
long. Like you say, you don't have time to hold on to that grudge or be upset about how you got out way before everyone else, because the game's about to be over anyway.
Or you create a meta and play game number two. I'm coming after you. Which is fun. It really is. Awesome. Do you have any more games?
I could talk quickly about one more game.
Let's do it.
I'll be brief, but I finally got a chance to play The Crew Mission Deep Sea.
Ooh.
I've been playing that one on Board Game Arena, actually.
All right.
And I loved the regular The Crew. Loved it. Had such a good time playing that. But it can, if I had a complaint about The Crew, Search for Planet Nine or Mission to Planet Nine, whatever the subtitle is, the symbols on the cards and the symbols in the missions are a little bit hard to parse for me. I'd look at it and I love trick-taking games, and co-op trick-taking is super fun. We'd look at the mission and be like, I don't actually know what these symbols mean. What am I supposed to do? You spend so much time trying to figure out what you're supposed to do for your tasks that mission. And I love the game, so I was like, I'll just overlook this. But with Mission Deep Sea, they've basically replaced all of that. So you now have all of your missions, but your tasks are going to be different every time because you have a deck of tasks now, and you pull out a certain number of cards until you meet a overall difficulty level for each mission. So you might have multiple tasks, because if your difficulty level for this mission is supposed to be 6 and you pull out 3 level 1 tasks,
right,
and
right,
then
right.
What, you know, like until you get to that, as opposed to if you just pull out 3 level 2s, now that's overall 6, but you might end up with 6 level 1s, and
right,
you've got to
right.
figure out how or whatever. And the cards basically just say what they are. Like, it'll say on it, like, I will not win more than 2 tricks.
Right.
You know, it's, you don't have to look anything up. The card just tells you what it is. It's so much more approachable, I think. And I realize, like, I love The Crew, and I grew up playing Spades with my sister, and I was like, oh, we love trick-taking games. I want to give her this game, but honestly, I don't know if she's going to be able to figure out this rule book and the tasks. And I've realized with Mission Deep Sea, I can just give that to her now because
sure.
the tasks are so clear.
Sure.
And I'm really excited about it. I'm having such a good time playing it, and it has less missions in it than the first The Crew. But because the tasks change every time you play it, you can play those missions more. There's more variety within the missions, if that makes sense. And I'm just having a blast with it. I think it's so wonderful. And it's like, wow, they actually took, for a game that I think had so little that needed to be fixed, to take those few little nitpicky things, put out a new version of the game that actually like addresses those tiny things that were bothersome about the first one, and elevates a game that was already so good. I think it's cool. I think it's admirable, and I'm excited about it. I
nice.
Played it today before our call, so it's on my brain.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I will never forget The Crew. It will be a memorable experience because we played it. So Brian, our store owner, came back from Gamma, which, if you remember, was the last thing that happened in board games in 2020. And he was living with us, him and his wife and his son. He now has another son because they were trying to buy a house. So they were living with us, and then, you know, the world shut down.
Right.
And so here we were. We're all home with quote unquote nothing to do. And we just sat down every night at 10 o'clock and played The Crew because he brought a copy home. It wasn't out yet. And we played 99 hands, and we beat all 50 missions.
Oh, so good.
And we played with like 2 couples, you know, him, his wife, me, my wife. And I mean, just with COVID and all that was going on, to just sit down every night for an hour and play 3, 4, 5, 6 hands of The Crew. And then just, we got through it in, you know, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you know, whatever it was, 99 hands. So, and I did get a chance to play the new one at Gen Con, and it was great. We're now playing the old one with my daughter, and I'm waiting till we get through that one. We're like, maybe I'm 30. And then once we get through that, I'm going to buy the new one to play with her because she's enjoying it too.
Yeah, it's so fun. And I have a similar thing. I was at AirCon in March 2020.
Oh, right.
And we were playing a lot of The Crew during that as, again, we like the world is shutting down and we're like in our hotel after AirCon, like in London. Me like, it's still 3 days till our flight, but we can't, there's everything's closed. We can't really go anywhere. Should we just go down to the lobby and play The Crew some more?
Yeah.
So I have a similar kind of, maybe that's part of why it has like a special place in my heart is those memories associated with playing it.
For sure. It's also just a phenomenal game.
It's great. It's so good.
Yeah, and the expansion, they did exactly the right thing. Give me the same thing, but change it, but don't change it too much that I don't know what it is anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Nice. Awesome. Well, those are the games that we've been playing, but we were going to talk a little theater. So here's, my wife said to keep the title. The title is Fly Casual. So if you don't know all of the episode titles, I do after Star Wars quotes. I'm a huge Star Wars person, but Star Wars is definitely something that's fading for me. not in how much I like it, just, you know, I don't know. I like Star Wars from when I was 5 or 7 or whatever, all the way forever, but I just don't pay attention as much. So I was trying to remember the quote. And so Han is talking to Chewie, and I thought he says, act natural. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, that'll work for our episode title. But he doesn't say act natural. He says fly casual. But I figured that works.
That's
the thing when you're doing theater, right? It's the whole, like, whatever. If you go out on stage and your suit isn't working, you run off and say, I need my oil can, and you go get everybody to fix it and fly casual. So I figured it was a good title. But that's where our titles come from. But we are both actors.
Yeah.
You are a professional actor, I believe. I am an amateur actor. But I thought it'd be fun to talk about acting and gaming and whether we use those in games or other things like that. So what kind of games do you play that you feel like acting takes a maybe a primary role?
Well, other than, I think the obvious answer would be talking about like tabletop RPGs. So we'll set that aside because I think that's a game that specifically requires role play. I think that's, you know, kind of the obvious surface answer. But I think this is a huge reason why I love highly thematic games. A lot of what I would call Ameritrash or games with the focus on narrative elements or storytelling. So the game that really got me into the hobby was Betrayal at House on the Hill. And that is because of how immersive that game can be narratively. You know, you're discovering a haunted house as you play, and then at some point someone becomes a traitor, and then you find out what new story is happening to you within this house because it's haunted in a different way every time you play it. And I was just like, wow, I'm like embodying this character, and I have all this flavor text on the cards I get to read. And it's like everything I wanted from Clue growing up, where I would act out the board game. Yeah.
Right.
You know, after playing it. But there's no actual story given to you in Clue. That's all in your imagination. Then I was playing Betrayal at House on the Hill, and I was like, there are board games are like this? I get to like be a character going on an adventure? More. I want more of this. And so I'm always on the lookout for games that let me feel like I'm doing that sort of storytelling. I love Tales of Arabian Nights is another one that I love, and it's a choose your own adventure game, basically. I mean, some would argue it's not even really a game because it doesn't matter who wins and there's no real strategy. There isn't, but I love it because you choose a thing and you flip to a page in the book and you find out what happens. And, but here's a game I love, one of my favorite game that I think a lot of people maybe wouldn't think acting comes into play with, but I use it when I play this game, and I make usually other people who play it with me do it as well. And it makes the game so much fun, and that's Modern Art. So this is a Rainer Knizia game, and it is an auction game about art. You are selling art, and you are trying to get other people to bid on the art in your hand. And you are also trying to buy art, but make good investments, because the art only has value determined at the end of each round based on how much of that particular artist sold that round. So it's very like, there's actually a lot of math in it. I do a lot of math when I play this game. But we always get really into it, and I love it, where I'm like, if I'm, you know, like, oh, I'm the House of London, whatever, and here up for auction today, and, you know, you set out your card, and you describe the painting, and try and sell people on it, not because you need to as part of the game, but because it makes the game more thematic and fun.
Right.
And I love doing that kind of thing.
For sure.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. What about you? How do you think...
I mean, I try to think of like word games. And again, I don't think of like code names, even Master Word. Those kind of have their own thing. But there's other ones we play. Time's Up kind of has it, although everybody, it's really charades, right? So there's some element to that. But I think of even things like Word Slam. Have you played Word Slam before?
I haven't.
Mm-mm. So just getting people into Word Slam. So The idea is there's two teams and they're both trying to guess the same word. And there's just a whole bunch of cards laid out in front of you. I was taught this by Daryl Andrews and Mandy, actually, were the two that taught me at Dice Tower Con 1 year. And again, it was like a 1 in the morning thing. But you got all these words laid out in front of you. And then you have like, you know, like the classic Scrabble rack that you can put the words on or whatever. And both teams are just, you know, you're broken up into teams and you're kind of facing against each other. They're both trying to guess the same word. So you're listening to the other team, but you're trying to pick up this, you know, maybe 80 words that are in front of you, but you can like put motion to them. So you're almost like making a little story that goes along with it and everything. So I feel like that stuff is kind of fun. And then even just thinking of like the creativity that brings to theater. So I play games now all the time with my improv troops.
Yeah.
Because it just gets people to know each other. It unlocks that box. Because somehow, sometimes when you get up on stage, you get stuck. Yeah. You're like stuck in either yourself or the like seven characters that you default to.
Yeah.
But when you play a game, you don't. So even things like catchphrase, Dixit is great because you really tell people, okay, you can't say one word. Like when I play it with theater people, it's like, you must say this. Like you must create a story, right? We always say an epic story. Our community theater is called Epic Arts, so it makes sense. It's an epic story. But that game has now traveled through the theater. Like, everybody in the theater is playing it all the time there because it's just your chance to just be like, okay, I'm going to tell you a whole story. And sometimes people make it so obvious and the game is easy, but who cares, right? It was the fun of, like, somebody telling me that story. I think you hit the nail on the head with the RPGs. That's obviously just a direct spot. But even sometimes you can just have fun, like, in some, well, Modern Art was a great example. I was actually going to bring that up. I was not with you in the game you had played at Dice Tower Con, but I was one table over, like, jumping in and hearing that. And it was really neat. But I even think, like, I played Anno 1800, and just even, like, making up the story of the person. Like, you're trying to give, you're trying to feed all your workers. I don't know if you've seen that game or played that game. Yeah, from Cosmo.
I haven't played it, but I'm, yeah, somewhat
Yeah,
familiar.
So it's like, oh, this is Stan, and Stan, he's really hungry, so he's looking for this, and oh, he's going to borrow something from you. And it's just, like, to me, sometimes that just brings flavor to the table in terms of doing all those things. So I like doing all that. But
it's part
sometimes
of that, like,
also
shared experience together.
Yeah.
Which I really love in gaming. Like, I like to solve a puzzle and feel smart, but I like to feel like I've shared a story with people as well. I'm always, I mean, as an actor, I'm always on the lookout for that. Hi, really? That's why I do theater. That's why I do, you know, film or TV, you know, that, and I can get that sometimes out of a game experience with a group if people are willing to kind of buy into it.
I think our other favorite are the murder mystery games.
Oh, yeah.
You ever do any murder mysteries? And like we do it and we ham it up, and it's really great, honestly, like being, you know, adult couples or whatever, and you get a bunch of people together, you know, 10 people, and everybody gets their little script, and it's super cheesy, but like that's the fun of it, right? Like it's just so fun to everybody picks out an outfit and people make all this amazing food. All of a sudden you've got this amazing meal because everybody brings their stuff. And you have your scripts and somebody's running it, but we just had a blast. We've actually done, people won't see this because it's a podcast, but this is my attic. We did a speakeasy up here. And what a better place to have a speakeasy.
Yeah.
So people had to knock on the door to be let in and everything.
Like,
that's
so
stuff was just really good. You know, we got to be quiet now in the attic. So I think that kind of stuff is really fun, even though, you know, again, it kind of strays from maybe the hobby board gaming in some sense. But I definitely encourage people who, there's definitely a group of people that are going to say, that is not for me, right? Like, that's just not what I want to do. But if it sounds interesting to you, maybe you're into RPGs, like, try some of that stuff. It's just way more fun than you think it's going to be. And 9 times out of 10, most people will show up because even if they don't want to play a character, they want to eat the food and hang out with everybody. Yeah. And they can just be one of the characters. So that stuff is surprisingly fun. I always kind of, I think I thumb my nose at it sometimes until I started doing them. And I'm like, this is really fun.
I think they're a blast, but yeah, I'm a total theater nerd. So I'm like, yeah, let me, I'll play pretend anytime. Or even like, I did some streams of Villainous and I like dressed as my villain for it. I was like, I'm going to try and embody the horned Ting, whatever his name was, now I can't remember, from the Black
It's
Cauldron.
so good that that is the one that you had to play. All the villainous characters, all the famous ones.
I had a great time with I had a great time with him. But yeah, I like to bring the little, that's very nerdy of me, but I like to bring that. But you even have a game like The Mind.
Oh,
When
there
I
you go.
heard about The Mind, I was like, I've been playing, no offense to The Mind, but I was like, I've been playing this game in improv as a warm-up for years. You know, it's literally you'd stand in a circle, shoulder to shoulder with your teammates.
One,
You all close your eyes
two,
and you start to
three.
count as a group and you try to make it to 20. And if anyone speaks at the same time, you have to stop and start over.
Yep.
It's just a, like a warm-up group think exercise. And I was like, that's what The Mind is. Like, but it's fun, especially, man, when you get it. It's so like, and I think that's like the thrill of why people enjoy playing The Mind as well, because when you'd get in sync with people and you're like magically on that same page and it just works, it's like the coolest feeling, which is really the feeling you get when you are doing improv or acting and you're truly like present and connecting with your scene partner. You get that like buzzy adrenaline feeling of like something magical is happening here. Yeah, and you can get that from the game and from
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
no,
Oh,
I
yeah, no,
no.
that was
I
it.
was
That was
like,
your I
tra
couldn't
letting
wait that
myself
moment.
trail off. No, I was letting myself trail off. Like, yeah, ooh, yeah, those are good moments.
I try to hammer home all the time to people that improv comedy is 50% comedy and 50% improv. There's an amazement of like, oh, I don't know if I could do what you just did on stage. Forget it if it was funny or not, right? If we could just create a cohesive story or a or an interesting set of characters, right? Is so much part of it that you want to do. Well, we are a little short on time, but I wanted to make sure to talk about your channel as well. Things get dicey, correct? Okay. It's like, I know the channel, but all of a sudden it slipped my brain. I didn't
All of
want
a
to say
sudden
it
you're
wrong.
like, wait, what am I?
I
No,
know.
I did that
I do
earlier in the
know
episode. I was like, wait, what is the name of this person in this game in this thing?
it.
Who publishes The Mind? Oh yes, it's Pandasaur. Is Pandasaur? Wait, no, it's No, it's not Pandasaur. I can picture that. It doesn't matter. Wait, who? See,
So
you can
Things
know
Get
things a bit about
Dicey
them.
is essentially a sketch comedy board game channel.
Yeah.
And it is phenomenal. I would call it the
Thank you.
premier sketch comedy video channel. It's just a
Wow.
phenomenal job. Not only do you do a great job acting,
Thank you.
the editing is phenomenal, the
Thank you.
writing is phenomenal. And I will say that my wife and daughter, who are not, they're gamers, but they are not content people, right? But when a Things Get Dicey video drops, they are there watching as soon as they can.
Aw,
They are very
yay.
excited to watch you, and they probably have no idea who some other content creators are. I'm not going to pick on anybody, but they know who Paula
That's
Deming is. So I just think
very
that's really
sweet.
neat, and I think that's been awesome, and I appreciate that you've done that and given my daughter somebody to even look up to, whatever she chooses to go and do, whether it be board games or whatever, that she just knows like, hey, there's a trailblazer too for her, in whatever she's interested in. So thank you for
That's an
that.
incredibly nice. I'm like emotional. That's an incredibly nice thing to say. I feel like comedy brings us together in so many ways. Entertainment. We deserve to have entertainment about the thing that we love, not just information. I think it's truly a thing that we as a community of people deserve. We deserve not just educational content, but content that's just meant to be fun and entertain us because it is about the thing we love. And if there are jokes, if I get a joke and you get a joke, even if we don't know each other, but we both get that joke, we realize we love the same thing and we feel like we're part even more of a community. I think comedy and entertainment is so big in building the sense of we are all in this together. And I just want to create that for people who love board games. And I'm just so glad that the series has been embraced the way that it has been and that people enjoy it and can see like that all kinds of people can enjoy games.
Yeah,
And yeah.
absolutely. Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure to
Thank you.
mention the channel, and people haven't checked it out, they definitely should, because you're doing a great job. I actually think what you said is basically how we've met, because we were both This Game Is Broken adjacent,
Yeah.
and we don't know each other, But we were, you know, attending, it must have been Dice Tower Con, and we just kind of assume, like, well, that person likes games and this game is broken, and that person likes, and we're like, cool, we can
yeah,
hang
we
out.
must, yeah, we must
Right?
have
And it
something in
wasn't
common.
much until when I saw you at Gen Con and hadn't seen you in a while, you came right over to say hello, like no issue, right? And it was easy because now we had something to connect with. So I
We
just
have
think
that
that's
common ground. Yeah,
such a neat
exactly.
piece. So
It is. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Paula. This was
Thank you for
great.
having me. This was so fun. It's fun to just sit and talk about games.
It is. And if I don't catch up with you in Connecticut, the good news is I will be in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia for PAX Unplugged. And as I always tell everybody, and I have no problem repeating it over and over, it is my favorite convention of the year because my wife goes with me. And all the others, I am solamente. Well, no, I'm because I'm with friends. I don't want to take that away from them, but I don't have her. And that's the one she always goes to because it is very close to
It's very
Connecticut to go
close,
to
yeah.
Philadelphia. So be exciting. So.
Yay.
Thank you
Well,
so
look for you
much.
there.
You can find Paula on Things Get Dicey. This Game Is Broken. Watch It Played. Did I miss? And on Twitch, the Gen Con channel, the Watch It Played Twitch channel, and your own Twitch channel?
And my own channel, Paula Deming, PaulaDeming.
That's awesome. So thank you for joining me for this episode 174, Fly Casual. My name is The Brant. And until next time, everybody, I hope you step into the portal. Bye!
Bye, everyone!